Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Stone, this will be a fun one. We've got some old friends and some new friends.
I love it when we have a blend like that. So first up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, no stranger to the Business Radio X microphone, president and founder with 4 Momentum LLC, Miss Molly Ray. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's so nice to be here with you this morning. Thanks for having me back.
Sure. Now, before the show began, Molly, you were teasing me about how long I've been doing this interviewing thing, but someone else has a kind of a maverick in the world of cause marketing. You've been doing that before it was cool. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I can't believe it, but this year I'm celebrating my 15th anniversary as with 4 Momentum. And it has been a whirlwind 15 years. Time flies when you're having fun. But I actually started my career in cause marketing way back in kindergarten. It was around 1988 when I was working with the Arthritis Foundation, helping them establish corporate partnerships. So it's been a fun road, but a long one.
So now your path was you worked at a nonprofit, a cause, right? And you were helping the cause raise money, do what they do to serve their community. And then at some point you said, you know what? Somebody needs to be a bridge to kind of help these two entities kind of get the most out of each other.
Mm-hmm.
Was that how the genesis of the idea?
Yeah, I actually started my career in advertising and had gotten a nice opportunity to see how marketing promotion works. Mm-hmm. And then I went to work in the nonprofit space, and then I went to work in the corporate space doing brand marketing. And that was really when I started to see the bridge, you know, that there was really a need to help these organizations find one another and work more effectively together and leverage some of those advertising techniques to really advance, you know, how they promote their partnerships and things. So
now, how has the industry evolved since you started?
Oh, gosh. Okay. So it's gone from about $750 million industry to over a $2.1 billion industry. So it's grown a lot in that time. Now it used to be back in the day that companies thought it was sort of a nice to do to work with nonprofits. They felt that they had a civic responsibility and, you know, they should sort of check the box.
Right.
A lot of United Way campaigns, you know, giving at the office, that kind of giving. And now it's really front and center in many companies' strategies. So they want to really exhibit their corporate social responsibility and their ways that they're helping the community. And then even more recently, a new trend is leveraging those nonprofit partnerships to attract millennials and Gen Z to come work for them.
Part of their corporate culture.
As a part of their hiring practices and corporate culture. So it's really becoming very much integrated throughout the business practices.
So it started as kind of a bolt on, hey, we're good guys here, we're supporting this cause. And now it's kind of in the fabric of the organization and a lot of organizations.
I'm going to borrow that. That's a great way to say it.
So now, how is it different in your, like at the beginning, was it hard to get the corporations to say, hey, you should partner? Like there was a lot of explaining. Is it now easier? The education side of this is easier, and now it's just kind of being a good matchmaker and finding people that our interests align?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, back in the day when I first started doing this back in the early ages, I would spend a lot of time cold calling and trying to convince the person who answered not to transfer me to the foundation because
I heard the word nonprofit, so that's foundation.
It's got to go to the foundation.
Right.
Exactly. Now there are entire departments that are set up to run these kinds of partnerships, and they typically coordinate internally with PR and human resources and marketing and, you know, corporate social responsibility. So it's really well integrated, to use your word. It's really woven through the fabric.
Now, is it because of the blurring of PR and marketing and social media and all this stuff, has that helped this? Because now cause marketing is kind of in the mix as well.
Mm-hmm. It really has become one of the cornerstone. And it's interesting because I think that what companies are really looking for now is some positive press. You know, they're all, they've always been looking for positive press, but now they're getting that positive press by promoting outside of their business, but inside what they're doing in the community.
Right. It's so, not we make a better widget. It's right. like look at how we're serving the community that we live in and we're part of.
Right. Exactly.
Which is a mental shift, right? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times, all the every marketing dollar was, hey, look at this new widget we have. It's blue now. It used to be red.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're saying, hey, look, this is our people volunteering building a house.
Right. And they're really integrating it into their, as much as possible, they're really integrating it better with their business.
Mm-hmm.
So a great example that's timely in the press, it's really sad, but when Kate Spade took her life a few months ago, now the Kate Spade Foundation, or the Kate Spade, which is the foundation side of the company, is doing a lot of work in suicide prevention. So that's a unique example, but one where they're really taking something that happened in their corporate culture and making it a cornerstone of their mission.
So now what percentage of companies are kind of have cause marketing as part of their mix?
Mm. You are asking some great questions. And I tell you, we did some research earlier this year with corporate practitioners of cause. And mm-hmm. so we had about 100 companies who shared their practices and input. And what we have found is that 89% of companies are now doing some sort of partnership with nonprofits.
Now, are they kind of being broad in their way they're answering that? Is that, would you say that it's 89% as well?
I do. I
believe think that's an accurate assessment.
I do think it is an accurate. Now, I think these are largely Fortune 500 size companies.
Right.
I think the smaller a company gets, of course, the harder that is for them to be able to budget
to invest,
and things
right.
like that. They tend to. So when I say partnership, it could be in the form of volunteerism.
Mm-hmm.
It could be in the form of collecting donations.
Right. It could be like giving. I have a box where they put toys in Christmas.
Exactly.
And that would check the box, and we're one of those 89%.
It would.
So now what about the ones who have kind of maybe a deeper immersion in this? Like what percentage are the ones saying, okay, you know what, cause is part of the DNA. We're going to go all in on this, and we're going to really just make it part of the culture.
Yeah, I don't have a percentage for that.
Gut feel? Is that 20% or is it 50?
My gut feel is that I would say a good 50-60% are trying to check that box, and about half of those are doing a super effective job because it's not easy. I mean, you have to really put resources against it, and it's not just a bolt-on, as you said earlier.
Now, can you share some strategies of companies saying, you know what, this is something we should kind of consider doing? What are some of the ways they can get started, some baby steps, and say, okay, we want to make this part of the DNA of our organization?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of different ways that companies can get started. I think first and foremost, there are local organizations. So I'm going to give a shout out for Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Corporate Volunteerism Council. And so this is a group of companies who come together on a monthly basis to discuss ways that their companies can engage more effectively in effective volunteerism.
So they're saying, hey, we have a bunch of people that are open to volunteering. What opportunities are out there?
Yeah,
is that what that is?
It could be that, but I think it's more, hey, we know we need to engage in the community, and a great way we can do that is through employee volunteerism. And oh, by the way, that happens to increase employee morale, employee longevity, employee hiring.
So, but some companies have a good intention, but they don't know how or what cause to, you know, how do they call them? Like, how do you even facilitate something like that?
Where to even start? And so that was where I was saying, you know, based on your question, how do you get started?
Right.
You know, if I were in their shoes, I would start by maybe joining a local organization who's focused on this, where I would meet peers at other companies and kind of hear what they're doing. There's also a lot of, you know, industry reading and resources that is available now that didn't used to be available. The Engage for Good Forum is a great resource. Points of Light, you know, offers a lot of great information, and so on and so forth. So there's good information to be found as you're establishing your strategy. And then one thing that I always recommend that a company do is look at their competitive space, because they can really see, you know, what are their competitors doing and how can they get some good ideas and possibly find a way to also differentiate and stand out from those competitors.
Now, how do they choose the nonprofit? Like, should it be strategic and, okay, this will, like, I don't want to, we work closely with Women in Technology.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good cause for a lot of technology firms, right? They're helping women. There's nobody's going to say anything bad about that. But they have a lot of people are clamoring for that, at, you know, being associated with that cause. Should they do it just because their competitor's there, or should they say, okay, what is another one, an underserved one? Like, how do you choose the right one to align with?
Yeah. Well, I think that the first thing that you mentioned is that you tie in with a technology sort of mission. Mm-hmm. And that makes sense. I call it the 3-second rule. Like, so why is this brand partnered with this brand? You know, there needs to be a nice bridge, and it needs to be like, oh, okay,
that makes sense.
That's not just self-serving or whatever. Now, in some cases, companies do that based on who their customers are passionate about. So we did a project years ago for the women's clothing store, Lane Bryant.
Right.
And Lane Bryant wanted to establish their partnership strategies. And so we actually did a survey of their most frequent customers. They have a frequency loyalty program. And so we went to those customers and asked them what matters to them. Mm-hmm. And by asking those customers, we also did a survey of their staff, you know, so their store managers. And so then we looked at those two.
Where it overlapped.
Yeah. And found those areas of synergy that they would get a double check mark.
Right.
You know, and so in this particular case, cancer was something that they were very passionate about, and women's health. Mm-hmm. And so we put together partnerships focused
on
those areas.
So now you're looking at nonprofits that serve those groups, and then that way everything's aligned.
Exactly.
So the first step then is kind of doing some research, some market research in terms of your customers and your people.
Yeah, and just looking for alignment.
It's not what the CEO likes.
That's a great point. It used to be.
Right. I like golf. And like everybody's like, huh? You know, no one else likes it, but he does.
Yeah, or, you know, somebody asked them to support something on the golf course or their wife's passion or that really was how it was done back in the day, or just peer pressure. You know, your United Way campaign had to beat your buddy's United Way campaign or something like that. So that was the genesis. That was way back when, but that's not really the way it's done anymore. Although if an organizational leader or someone within the organization is deeply impacted by a situation.
Right. Like, this is personal now.
Right. That can be a very genuine way. And that happens a lot for one of our clients, Make-A-Wish. You know, so they fulfill wishes of children who are ill. And a lot of times when someone within a company is impacted by that, you know, the employee base and the whole culture rallies around that. And so they can become a natural partner.
Right. And because it's from the heart, it's genuine, it's authentic, all that stuff.
Exactly.
And then people can rally behind it because of the whole organization wants to support that person.
Yeah. And I'll give you one more. This is a cute example from a local company called Mud Pie. And they make a lot of adorable baby clothes and home accessories and things. And one of the things that they're known for are these really cute baby socks that look like fireman's boots or ballerina slippers. They're just really, really unique and cute baby socks. And so they were contacted by a NICU unit, a neonatal intensive care unit, because there was a baby there who, you know, was wearing the socks and they just, it was so, that brought so much joy.
Right.
And so they ended up, you know, creating a passion around helping kids in NICU. So you can find your natural point. It can be as obvious as we're technology, so we should do technology. Right. It can be a personal story. It can be, you know, something that your consumers and employees are motivated
by. And sometimes they'll let you know, right? In this case, the consumer's like, hey, I have this thing, you're bringing me joy, and people probably wasn't on their radar, right?
Yeah, they had no idea.
Now their focus can be on that.
Yeah. So they saw the story through their consumer's eyes.
Right.
Yeah.
So now, what about, because cause is a broad term, what about some of these more controversial causes where it's polarizing in today's?
So give me an example of what you're thinking of.
Like a political or something along those lines.
Yeah. So gun violence is an example. And again, I'm going to use the juxtaposition of what was and what is and what's trending. Mm-hmm. So it used to be that there were certain topics that were just completely taboo.
Off limits.
Yeah. It's like it's it's socially accepted to raise money to fight cancer. Right. And no one's going to argue with that, right? But to raise money, the one of the edgy ones from a few years back that's now mainstream is domestic violence.
Right.
You know, this was way before Me Too. This was way before any right. of that. And then more recently, companies are actually seeking out stories from the news because it gives them a bigger platform. So, you know, with the Parkland shooting, right. Marjorie Stone Douglas shooting, things like that, companies now, actually Dick's Sporting Goods came out with a stance that they won't sell certain types of guns anymore in their stores. So they're trying to jump on that political issue and show how they can make a difference.
And they're willing to take the heat because there's a constituency that says, hey, then we're never going to Dick's Sporting Goods.
Right.
Whereas before they would just be silent about it and wait till it blows over.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're just being more proactive in their
yes.
kind of feelings about certain issues.
And that is what I think is one of the top five trends in, mm-hmm. in our space these days is companies actually, you know, looking for issues that they can rally around and make a difference with.
So now, are there any types of strategies that people can use using social media? Are there common hashtags that people can get behind or things that are kind of fairly simple to implement?
Absolutely. There are a lot of hashtags used in the cause space for sure. Right. So
you'll make a glossary for it.
Yes, yes. I'll be posting that later. But, you know, really you can do so much just with a good old fashioned Google search to find out, you know, what your issue is, what you're interested mm-hmm. in, and get a list of those organizations that are addressing it. I'm a big fan of collaboration. Obviously, my agency is all about partnership.
Right.
But even nonprofit to nonprofit, I do get a lot of nonprofits or passionate people that are coming to me because they've been impacted personally by something and they want to start a nonprofit to address it. And my advice is to look for others who are doing something similar and join forces, because
rather than just everybody just be their own individual kind of voice, this way you can combine and have maybe more of an impact.
Exactly, and save some administrative costs and right. things like that, so that more of the money goes to the mission,
to the cause, instead yeah. of just your organization.
So I guess I'm kind of riffing off what you brought up about social media to say that's a great way for companies to find nonprofits, but also for individuals to find causes that they're passionate about.
Right. And then what about like disaster relief and whenever there's a crisis,
mm-hmm.
is there a way to plan that?
Yeah, actually, that is such a huge issue. September is National Preparedness Month. So we're actually working on a campaign right now with one of our clients. Their name is AmeriCares, and they do a lot of disaster relief and recovery. Also, some of our other clients like Habitat have huge practices in disaster recovery. And we are helping and coaching companies how they can be more proactive in their planning. So again, on the theme of trends, back in the day, something happened and companies would just suddenly give money.
Right.
And they've been doing that up until even last year. But last year was a record. I think there were like a dozen $1 billion disasters,
right.
Or more. And so companies were running out of money, you know, more disasters were coming. How can you keep on, you know,
writing those checks? You know?
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of them were even U.S. based. So, you know, Houston and, you know,
right.
and so on and so forth. So at the Corporate Volunteerism Council Points of Light, they had a collaborative meeting to talk about strategic planning and how companies can be more intentional about. They know, unfortunately, we know disaster is going to happen.
Right. We just don't know where or when.
We just don't know where or when. So, you know, the disaster planning cycle, people think of disaster when it strikes and you're jumping in and you're having that disaster
response.
Right.
It's like a triage situation.
Right. So there's planning before that.
Right.
There's infrastructure to put in place before that. Then there's response. And then the longest period of all is recovery.
Right.
There's this huge long tail of recovery.
Yeah, that doesn't get as much press.
It doesn't. And so that's when the nonprofits desperately need the resources and the camera lights have turned off and moved on to the next thing.
Right.
So we're trying to, Form Momentum is trying to help companies with strategically planning to engage in the right part of that four-step process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, actually on our website, we have a free webinar that we did to help companies plan. So if listeners are interested in listening to that, it gives you a lot of good tips about how to establish your own disaster planning.
And it's one of those things where in PR and in marketing, you have like kind of an editorial calendar for the year, right? Like mm-hmm. that you can pre-plan certain activities like around different things. You should pre-plan some sort of a disaster contingency that mm-hmm. can fit in there, but it can flex to when the need arises.
Absolutely. I think that companies absolutely need to establish a budget.
Right.
They don't know when they're going to spend it.
Right. But it's there at the ready.
Exactly.
And they have a plan of attack of, okay, when this this type of thing happens, we're ready to go.
Yeah. And a company, you know, one company that I would love to give a shout out to that does a phenomenal job with this is UPS.
Right.
And so they actually have an entire portion of their foundation mission mm-hmm. is on disaster preparedness. And so they, I mean, obviously can play a tremendous role, not just giving money, but literally, you know, intelligence and trained staff
right.
people and delivery and all that kind of in logistics. So they literally have drills all throughout the year so that they are ready to go
right.
when things happen. So they certainly are, you know, maybe at the front of the line or the top of the list of a company who's really, you know,
doing a good
doing
job.
It right. Mm-hmm.
And it's you're seeing a lot of local companies like the Home Depot is great when a disaster. They're really fast to implement in their stores all over, mm-hmm. like they're helping with materials or even Coke is available to all of a sudden they're just now making, you know, water appear in all these places where they don't have water. So there's opportunity to leverage the resources of these organizations if they pre-plan for it.
Yeah, and back to what you said earlier that we started talking about how do you find your right partner?
Mm-hmm.
You can also find your right part in the disaster story, right? So, you know, whether it's Coke providing water, I mean even Budweiser changes,
right.
you know, all of
sudden,
their productions to
water. Well, most of their stuff is mostly water.
they did not lead with that.
Right, exactly.
They only had to take one little piece out.
Right.
No, but, you know, Tide is another great example. They have a program called Loads of Hope where they
right.
literally bring in big, huge trucks of washing machines to do people's
wow.
laundry. So if you really think about your brand and what authentically can you bring to
right.
to the picture.
And think about Dawn, that changed their whole brand.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, they were the ones that got, you know, oil off of animals. And
exactly.
then that changed their whole positioning in the market, in the mind of the consumer.
Yeah, so now it's on their brand 100%
right.
of the time, beautiful wildlife pictures.
Right.
And absolutely.
So now these are some of the conversations you have with your potential clients and clients, right? How to strategically kind of leverage what their superpower is with the need in the community.
Yes, absolutely. So we help both companies and nonprofits. So when we are helping a company, we want to look at what they're currently doing, help them evaluate it, help them right size it and maximize it. So sometimes they can make simple changes that will double or triple the impact that they're creating just by being more organized or by coordinating
things. Like
what's
an example of how you can kind of really get more bang for your buck that maybe people are doing it one way and if they would just make this small change, it could have more of an impact?
Well, a project that we did, it's not in the public domain, so I can't speak to it, but I can speak enough that you can get the gist of it, right?
Sure.
So it's a fast food type of restaurant, and they were raising money through simple measures like coin collection
right,
at the register.
Right.
And they were making millions of dollars of impact. They really were. But what we did is go in and interview the store managers to find out what are the barriers to success of you raising more money. Well, you know, this thing on my counter is taking up space and you know, when I have to ask the customer to do this or that, it's slowing down the transaction time and I have people waiting in line, so that doesn't work. You know, so we found their pain points and
right.
then we helped them find solutions that would make those processes faster so that more of the stores would want to do it
right.
and would be willing to add that to a part of their routine.
Right. Like I've seen some of those that say, do you want to round up, you
mm-hmm.
know, just like a simple question, the round up for charity or something.
Right.
And then it just makes everything go faster.
Mm-hmm.
And then you probably end up with more money going to the nonprofit.
Right. It does. But you also have to realize too that If the cashier isn't able to tell the customer what the mission is,
it's hard then.
What am I rounding up for? So
right.
a lot of our work is in educating
Education.
Employees, creating that passion for them. Why
right.
do they care? What, you know, what?
And that's why if it's aligned right, they're going to care.
Exactly. Yeah. If they can see the impact, and that's where it really helps to have a local impact. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times these big national brands are working with national nonprofits, but wanting to deliver local impact in their community. So.
And then is that kind of an opportunity for the small to mid-sized company is to really champion the hyper-local in their own community?
Yeah. So the smaller mid-sized, my recommendation just as a rule of thumb, I gave you my first one, which is the 3-second rule to make sure things make sense. But the other is to partner with an organization that has a similar footprint. You know, so if I am a small local nonprofit, I'm not going to go after the big national companies. I don't want to name names because it makes them sound like they wouldn't support, because sometimes they do. And if I am a regional company, I want to only generate impact in the areas where
it makes
have
sense.
Stores.
Right.
Yeah. Now, I guess an exception to that rule might be if you're really passionate about cancer research, you want to support cancer research wherever that is happening, not only because. So there's strategy that you have to develop to accomplish your respective goals.
So what do you need more of in order to fulfill your mission?
To help
your organization, what do you need? Are you looking for more nonprofits, more businesses, more just growth in general? What do you need?
Yeah, so we help both nonprofits and companies. We have more nonprofits on our roster right now. But I think I would answer it this way. What we need more of is the ability to help our clients understand that these things take time. Mm-hmm. A lot of times they want instant results, and so it isn't as effective as it can be, and so a lot of opportunity is lost because there's not enough time given to the process.
Right, so you got to kind of build foundationally for a while and invest and be patient, mm-hmm. and then let the thing kind of blossom.
Yeah, so for example, we haven't talked much about this, but we help nonprofits with outreach to companies, and they think they're going to call once and the company's going to write them a check.
Right.
And that's not the way it works. that would be nice. I had a nonprofit. I do a lot of teaching, and I had a class I was teaching, and this student said, "But my boss makes me take a contract to every meeting that I have." And I was like, "And how many of you ever gotten signed?" Well, none. I'm like, okay, let's break this down and think about this a little bit.
And then imagine that in your world of nonprofits doing that.
Exactly.
So if somebody wanted to learn more and have more substantive conversation, where should they go?
So formomentum.com is our web address, and that's F-O-R. Momentum.com. And if you type in formomentum.com/resources, we actually have a wide variety of information on a variety of subjects related to cause. We also have a blog series that you can subscribe to. So we take it as a part of our mission really to educate the business community about cause and how they can implement it. So we encourage people to come to our website. We also have a contact us page there. So I think I could spell my name, but everything about my name is spelled funny. So I'll just say you can type marketing@formomentum.com marketing@formomentum.com, and you'll get to me through that.
Fantastic. Well, Molly Ray with Four Momentum, thanks so much for coming back and hanging out with us.
Well, thank you for having me. You guys ask great questions.
Well, keep up the good work. We'll have you back because we like to check in periodically, and you know we're quite sincere when we say we really do want you to come back.
Well, thank you. I would love to.
Hey, how about staying with us? We got a couple more guests we're going to visit
with. I can't wait to hear all about it.
All right. So, Lee, before we get into this next segment, I've got a little bit of a break for a grammar test. Were you to come across a word spelled C-O-N-T-I-N-E-O, how would you pronounce it?
I'd ask Brian.
Yeah.
How would you pronounce it?
Yeah, well, it's called Continio.
Okay. But. All right. Well, hold the phone. Now you get your real intro.
Yeah,
all right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, please join me in welcoming to the show from the Continio Group, Brian Russell and Ron Crump. Good morning,
great.
Gentlemen.
Thanks for letting us join in this morning. So
good morning.
It's fun.
So what'd you learn in that last segment? There was a lot of conversation.
That was powerful.
There.
Very good stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Molly knows a thing or two.
Yeah. So we, as a part of our company, we're a smaller company, and but I'm married to volunteerism as well. My wife is very big into that as a nonprofit, and so I was very interested in your segment because I live it every day.
Awesome.
So
that's great to hear.
Absolutely. And because of that, our company is very involved with our employees and teaming with other people very locally, like you're talking about. Smaller companies need to focus very locally. So, and that's been a huge success for us in drafting and finding talent. So,
yeah, just like Molly said.
Awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. We live it every day. So thank you.
I love
for that.
To see the numbers come to life in reality.
That's right. It's not a theory.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, Brian and Ron, why don't you share a little bit about your work? How are you serving folks?
Well, we're Continio Group, and we are civil engineers. And people always say, well, what is that? I don't really understand. And it really is a function of what we do every day. We design everything that you don't see. So we design everything outside of a building. We design roads and bridges and infrastructure that's buried in the ground. So so a lot of people wonder what we do, and that's what we do. So,
are your clients typically the government?
We do private sector. Our company does in particular. So,
okay, so like if somebody was developing an area, they would need to connect to the sewer, and they need to
focus
connect
on real estate development as far as everything outside of the building footprint, everything around you. What we like to say jokingly is we're the ninjas of the design world. The big sexy is the building. Everybody looks at the building and thinks, oh, wow, that's gorgeous. Nobody wants to think about how you got there. Was it easy to get there? Did you have problems finding parking? Was there any issues with the infrastructure, the water, the sewer?
So they get all the glory, and you guys are the unsung heroes of the project?
I would say yes.
That's right. Yeah. We're kind of the offensive linemen of the right. group. So, but yeah, so, you know, we focus on private sector projects and corporate projects. So we have a lot of clients that do a lot of really large projects that are like mixed use developments. For
right. So there's a lot of that live, work, play where there's
yes.
like a giant
mm-hmm.
building.
Mm-hmm.
There could be a movie theater. There could mm-hmm. be restaurants.
Yes,
it is. The industry shift is really driven towards a community style.
Right.
The jurisdictions have become so much more community focused, and it's really brought in some very interesting elements into the design world.
Mm-hmm. And did it change your business of how you kind of do what you do?
Absolutely. So, you know, with the onset of online marketing and sales nowadays, you know, retail is kind of going away in a lot of ways. And so our business is driven on new construction.
Right.
And so the brick and mortar type projects now are really geared toward two things. They're really service oriented things. They're hospitals and gas stations and the service types of
right.
things that you would do. And the other is very destination oriented. And so that's kind of how the two projects kind of come to be for us. So,
so how do the developers find you to choose you?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're a service oriented business, and so it's people to people, and so we if they know you and like you, they use you. So we get out there and face to face.
Our product truly is our people, mm-hmm. because in the end, the design world, they need somebody who has their best interest in mind, who's able to negotiate the permits with the jurisdictions, and as I mentioned,
so that's part of what your responsibility is.
It would be, yes, sir.
Absolutely. So we've had a shift over the past 10 years with the economy downturn. There was kind of a brain drain that happened. So you have a lot of baby boomers that are kind of timing out of the industry, and a lot of people didn't go into engineering and a lot of these other design issues that we deal with every day. So now there's really young people in the industry and very old people, and so like us. So we've been at it for 25 years. And so, but what has happened is now where we used to would just purely be designing and obtaining permits and that type of thing, now there's been a reluctance in the industry to really bring on a lot of staff as far as the development management process.
So they outsource?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they outsource it. And so that's been a big boon for us with kind of the downsizing of some of the way the design elements are with retail shrinking and that sort of thing. The program management piece has really started to blossom, I guess, where they hire us to come in and help manage the process from the design and the entitlement process through construction.
So now your responsibility then is you're a vendor for the developer, and then you have to find the talent?
Yes, absolutely. So we
so have, that's a slight shift as well, right?
Absolutely. So we used to, the developer would have a staff that would go in and solicit for construction services, architectural services, right, and that sort of thing. Now we come in and fill that void for them. And so we go out and solicit materials and people and all the resources that it takes to build a facility.
Now, are you primarily here in Atlanta or Georgia, or are you all over the place?
So we're located in Decatur, Georgia, and it's our backyard, our hometown. And that's where we
like to be. Is that
where
your work?
Yes.
It takes place as well?
Yes. And so we're registered in 22 states as professional engineers, and we're working in about half of those states right now.
So how do you work in those states? Like, how do you have resources in all those states?
So, you know, the program management and design piece can be done, you know, here, within the confines, right, of an office space. And then we position people out on the specific projects.
So you take people from here and then you send them to those states, or you have relationships in all those different states?
We have relationships with other people, like-minded people like ourselves.
So how do you find those people? Is that...
word
hard
of mouth and, yeah.
Casting a wide
net. Because they have to be aligned with you philosophically, talent-wise, right?
Absolutely. So it's very trust-oriented business. I mean, you know, when people are spending millions of dollars, right, based on what you say every day. So it's a very trust-oriented business. So, you know, we tend to go word of mouth and find the people that other people trust, that we trust.
So now, how has technology impacted your industry? Is it, I mean, I would think now with the advent of the computing power that's at everybody's disposal, now projects that couldn't even be imagined before can now be built, right? Because of modeling, they can...
Well, that's a great question. We have now all these excess tools at our disposal.
Right.
And everything that was once a drawn-out hand calculation, of course, is now being pumped through a computer.
And tried in a million different ways to fail, and then they find the one way that works, and now you go and build that pool that sticks out the side of that building.
That's exactly right. We've got
where
one hanging off the side of
the
mountain.
Couldn't possibly do that before, right? Like the human brain, you couldn't have just sit there with a pen,
right,
and paper,
mm-hmm,
and figured that out, right?
It would certainly take you a whole lot longer, and that's the drafting elements, and we look forward to the future with all the new 3D and virtual reality aspects that are coming into play.
It's almost anything you can imagine is almost possible, right?
It is, and you can see it real time on the property. So anything that we can dream up, we can walk out with an iPad and hold it up, and we can see the designs in three dimensions out on the property.
So using augmented reality?
Augmented reality, yes. That's the new...
connected via GPS satellite, you know exactly where you are on that site, and you're looking around and saying, this is where my building is going.
So, on air light on the wall, they could probably make it come on.
Really?
We've had it there for 6 months. We think it looks great, but we can't make it come on.
But so that's the thing. Now you can go with a client, and they can walk the land, mm-hmm, and then see the thing,
exactly,
what it's going to look like. And then probably when the thing's built, it looks like what...
The rendering capabilities have just come light
years. It's not like a little model that you're putting on the table saying, hey, that's where this is going to be.
Mm-hmm. Now, with that said... The pressure we get is everybody thinks we have the easy button.
Right. Well, I just saw it here in the iPad. And so why is it taking 6 months to build this thing? I'm confused. So then you're the boots on the ground where you're...
So balancing everybody's expectations and making sure that the jurisdictions understand and the municipalities and the community's involvement and, of course, the developer who's putting the money in.
Right.
Everybody has to come to the table together, understand what is going to happen, how it's going to happen, and what it really does take to make this happen.
So that's a lot of your time is managing expectations?
I'd say that's 99% of our time.
99%.
Yeah, so we're very, construction has been, referred to as ants on an anthill, and it still is. And so you have to have a lot of communication in order to make that anthill work. And so, with things like augmented reality and a lot of the other types of technology that are coming online, it's really making it a lot easier to resolve issues in real time out at construction that used to cause a lot of money, which is time and delays on projects. So the augmented reality is the single biggest thing that's impacted us so far.
In terms of that accelerates the time? Because the people can see it, it's no longer on paper or in their imagination. They're actually seeing it so they can go, you know what, I don't like that. that way? Can we make this way?
It's become extremely helpful in that because we find that something I consider straightforward, it may not be to somebody else and vice versa. Right. You know, not everybody's brain
Didn't
is wired the same.
Do something like this. You drove that car at the place.
Right. We went to an agency that does augmented reality, and they had
you are here.
A Porsche. And then you had the iPad, and then you just pointed, and then there's the Porsche. It's like right there. To the point of you can see the grain in the leather. Like, you can zoom in, and it's there. Mm-hmm. And you can then go, okay, go, and then now it's driving. Through the
and then you're like, I don't like yellow. I want red.
Right, and it's like, bam, snap your finger.
Yeah.
So you do that, too. You go, I don't want that road to be there. Move it over there. And you just press a button, and it's like, moves over there, right?
Exactly. That's the big idea there with that is being able to hold an iPad up to a wall that has been completed in a building, but then go, oh, wow, we missed something. And you can hold it up and see what's in the wall versus what was designed.
So you can kind of go layers deep in the mm-hmm. wall.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of great modeling software. The Civil 3D connects to Revit and all that ties together to just allow us to see the whole picture.
And then the client can make a decision like, hey, if we move this, then this is a ramification of this. So you're going to write that check?
Precisely.
You
know,
or we're going to just deal with it.
Yeah, and so all those prices are loaded into the software. So as the building models are built, the price for glass or the price for whatever material you're building with is already preloaded. So as you make these changes, it tells you in real time kind of what some of these cost impacts would be.
And then to the point of if this was a brick building, you could tell me how many bricks.
Absolutely.
Right,
absolutely.
And be right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Right? It automatically keeps up with material schedules and things like that.
But that's
as well,
crazy, so. Right? Like that's, I mean, when you started, you can't imagine that could exist, right?
Absolutely.
No,
right? This
absolutely.
Is like science.
That used to be days and days
fiction.
Of somebody.
This is science fiction compared to when you started, right?
Absolutely. And I'm just I'm excited to see what the future holds.
Right. So you're embracing it. You're kind of leaning into the technology, your firm?
100%.
Absolutely. So, you know, us being civil engineers, we design everything that's under the ground. And so that's the single biggest risk to a developer is not knowing what's under the ground.
Right.
And so a lot of these technologies are coming online to let us kind of peer into that. And so check off the items on the old risk register where
right.
you can.
And you can minimize a lot of the risk.
Absolutely.
And that's the value you guys bring to the table, right?
Absolutely.
Now, what's your... kind of take on how the economy is going? Are you bullish, bearish? Is this time to kind of go for it, or should we be
you know, I hate
cautious?
To even speculate on the economy piece of it because in the end, it depends on which side you listen to on what right. day. For us, the future really is more of a question of how will development change and what will our needs be in the future. They are trying to automate us out to some degree, I guess. And
oh, engineers can be outsourced.
Absolutely. You know, we're fearful of AI, right? That's what's going on right now with us.
There might be a software program that replaces Continia.
Absolutely. So, but no, you know, I think locally here, I don't see anything changing. I mean, construction is continuing to boom. There's so many corporations moving here, and a lot of we're centrally located in the southeast, and so the distribution facilities that are coming online now, I think, are going to only continue to grow.
So now, what industries are the ones you look at to see if things are going your way? So is it construction? Is it development? Are you looking to see more apartments being built or more, warehouses being built? Like, what are your kind of indicators?
Absolutely. It's the availability of money, basically, out in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. So we talk to a lot of people, you know, are they funding projects? What type of, capital investments are they making out in the marketplace? That and along with, kind of a more passive indicator is the number of permits that are issued out in communities in a given
I just count the cranes.
Well, that's great too. So, yeah,
there's a lot of cranes.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, the ones that have cranes have already passed.
They don't need you anymore.
That's right.
So you need who's ordering cranes? So, and now for you, what do you need more of? Are you always looking to hire now? You're trying to attract younger people, I guess, to the organization.
Absolutely. That's our single biggest challenge that we have because of the way the economy was previously. So it's really hard to find talent. So
And that's one of the reasons why we embrace technology so much. We find that the new talent really does want to be part of the community. They want to engage in all the new interesting things. They want to see the
They
want to
build that monument, right? They want to be part of projects that they're proud of that they put on a resume and say, that I helped build that.
Well, right? And that's actually one of the best parts about civil engineering for me personally. That's one of the things that drove me to it, was everything we do becomes a very tangible reality.
Right. You can point to it and say, I helped do that.
That was me.
Right.
And the reason we are considered a first world country is purely because of what civil engineers have brought to this country. And
so now when you're working with young people, are you finding them all over? Are you leaning into like the local universities? Like where do you find them?
All over. A lot of word of mouth still. So we go to a lot of the universities. We have about half our staff is probably from Georgia Tech, and then we have a sprinkle from everywhere else. So we love Georgia Tech.
So like how would you work with the Georgia Tech? Like do you do internships? Do you involved in some of their clubs or some of their organizations to give them job shadowing opportunities? Like how do you work with the university to, you know, kind of vet the talent?
Exactly that. We do know several of the professors, myself an alum, and so because of that, we hear from these professors who they think are the next rising stars. Mm-hmm. We focus on that. We do have internship programs. We give some of these outreach-style programs.
Right. So now do you, like, sponsor networking events, or do you, like, you got to just stay in front of them, right? You got to be kind of...
Absolutely. So we make the round, we make the circuit to the different universities within sort of the metro area and do that as well.
Is civil engineering, is that a sexy major for Georgia Tech?
Absolutely not. At Tech, it might be. I don't know, but I mean, anywhere
there,
else,
are there
not.
Civil engineer startups? Like, there's a big startup community at Georgia Tech.
No, I doubt that.
So now what can you get them younger? Is there a path, like if they're good at a certain thing, they might be a good civil engineer?
Well, that's what I'm so encouraged by with the advent of STEM in the schools coming online. It's you're starting to see a lot more of that. So you know, the next big boon in construction is going to be robotics and STEM, and a lot of these other things are really steering kids toward those types of things. And the spinoff of that is they're very good with technology. And so we're heavily technology related in how we produce things. So STEM is the single biggest thing that's coming up for us in the elementary and high schools. Yeah.
Now, what about any opinions about like autonomous cars? How does that impact, you know, roads and things like that in your world?
Absolutely. There's lots of discussion right now about how those things should happen and how the roads should be designed relative to those things.
Because it would be different than if a human's driving than if a machine's driving, right?
Absolutely.
Aren't there sensors?
Mm-hmm. A lot of the safeguards that are out there to kind of course correct for human error can go away. I mean, costs can go down. There's all these different impacts that can
And
that can
Stone's
happen.
Working on an invention that charges vehicles as they drive on the roads.
So oh, excellent.
That's exciting.
Yeah. So there's all kinds of things happening. So this is an exciting time for you guys.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, another thing that's going on right now is there's companies out there that are designing different things for roads can actually generate power. So I know in France they've mm-hmm. installed the first highway that's solar powered. The pavement is, and so it generates power as you're driving over it.
Wow. So you're bullish about Atlanta. You're still hanging in there. Civil engineer is still a thing.
Absolutely. It's still there.
Until somebody invents some software. Yeah. And then you're busy, right?
We stay very busy, and right now is a great economic time. We were fortunate enough. We've been in business since 2009. We decided to...
After that downturn, you're like, hey, this is an opportunity.
A lot of people thought we were crazy for leaving... paying jobs to start our own company, but at that time we saw that was the way to ride the economic wave back up.
Because you're optimists. Now, for you, how can we help? What do you need more of? Like, tell us your perfect prospect. Is it a developer that's doing what kind of work? construction.
Yes, if there's a corporate client out there that has reoccurring projects, we do a lot of. So if they have a capital improvement program that's out there, we'd like to help them manage it. And if there's design involved, we'd like to do the design portions of it for them.
And then what kind of things are they building?
Yeah, they would be building really any type of building. So it can be any type of use. The use is not as relevant to a civil engineer as an architect. So mm-hmm. As long as we can get people to it and get utilities and infrastructure to it, then we've done our job. And so, but corporate clients that have recurring program capital improvement programs or a private developer that has wants to invest in capital and land.
And do you do any trade show work? Do you like get the word out through that?
Yeah, some we do. We used to be really involved in ICSC, which was the International Council of Shopping Center Developers,
right.
But we're still involved with that.
So now if somebody wanted to learn more and have a more meaningful conversation, what's the best way to get a hold of you? Have a website?
Yeah, it's www.tcg.engineer.
Wow, good URL. How'd you pull that off? That was some foresight
yep.
there.
We're nerds at heart.
Well, Brian and Ron, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.